morning, everyone. We're running a little bit late, so we'll go ahead and get started. And just for the record, Mrs. Disney is on her way, but there was an accident on 95, so she's delayed a little bit. But with that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Adams.
Thank you. We'd like to welcome our representatives from NEOLA. And actually, I'm going to turn it over to Mrs. Lannon so she can do the introductions and get us started.
Thank you very much, Superintendent. Board members, good morning. It's nice to be here with you on our first adventure together with NEOLA. I will tell you that over the past 2 months, staff has been working hard on other parts of the policy. In HR, we've covered a lot of the 1,000 sections. Curriculum's been working hard on 2,000s, and HR also with 3,000s and 4,000s, which also involve employee matters. And yesterday, Mr. Morrison and some of his team had a chance to meet. So we're working hard to prepare to bring those policies to you over the course of time. But today is your opportunity to work on your policies, and I'd like to reintroduce to you the members of the NEOLA consulting team who are with us. To my immediate right is Tom Young, and to his right is Pat Corbett, and to his right is Frankie St. James, and they've just been working so hard, and we appreciate all their efforts on our behalf. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Young.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Madam Superintendent, Mr. Chairman, board members.
It's all right.
Okay.
Let me call. I feel like we're
going to be here.
Last week.
Oh, that's on the recorder.
When's that legal contract up for renewal?
Today, exactly.
Okay.
A brief introduction of the three of us, a little bit more than Pam offered. Frankie St. James is the one who will be taking the language that we discussed today and working it into policies, and then she'll be saving. She's our technologically adept person. Pat is adept as well. I am not. I am incompetent technologically. I wish to stay that way so I can do what Frankie's going to be doing. Frankie's been a teacher, a principal, a deputy superintendent in Monroe County, and has, as a deputy superintendent, she was basically responsible for facilities and HR and finance and operations. All the things that happen in a small school district came through Frankie's office. Pat is a recovering superintendent from Ohio, and before he was a superintendent, he was a teacher and a principal and HR and facilities and finance, and then a superintendent for 16 years. So he brings, the two of them bring a wealth of experience from the operational side, where the rubber meets the road side. And my experience has been, as you may have heard, some refer to it as my dark side, when I was general counsel for the teachers union for 16 years, when Carolyn Shepherd was the president here and Roger Deering was the superintendent. I worked with those two very closely. I was the chief negotiator for Miami-Dade when the law was passed, collective bargaining law was passed in 1975, and I've been a PERC administrative law judge and assistant general counsel, Public Employees Relations Commission, and I've been a school board member in Leon County and chairman of Leon County for 2 years in the late 90s, and assistant superintendent for human resources and employee relations in Charlotte County, where I worked with NEOLA. NEOLA was the company then, doing policy changes. Good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
And as a result of that relationship where I did what Pam does here, I was the liaison with NEOLA and learned firsthand how NEOLA operates and about the service from the client's perspective. When I left there, the president of the company asked me if I'd be interested in working with NEOLA on the other side of the table. And because I have a high regard for the quality of the service and a genuine affection for the people who deliver the service, it was not a difficult decision for me to make. That having been said, we're ready to start this process. Today involves your bylaws. this will be a unique experience for you and one that will not be repeated. When we see you next, if assuming that we finish, even if we don't finish, we'll see you again on bylaws. But once we finish the bylaws, the next time we see you will be in workshops where we will discuss with you the recommendations that your staff is making for changes in policy. So today, these are your policies on how you operate. The next time in workshops, they are your policies based upon recommendations from staff. Staff is doing now what you will be doing here collegially because we have government in the sunburn here in Florida. You can't meet and talk about these the way staff does before they come to us. So this is kind of going to be a case of first impression for you. What you've been given are policy templates in the green notebook, or the white notebook with the green cover. Those are NEOLA policy templates. They are not intended to be the last word. They are intended to be a place to begin. We would like you to use them as a default. We begin with these. They are based upon our experience in Florida. We have 16 other districts with whom we work. They are based on Florida law. They are intended to be consistent with Florida law and federal law. They are intended to reflect best practices as are viewed by many districts in Florida, but each district we have found when we go through these ends up being very district specific. Policies will be revised because of your unique character. And it goes without saying that Indian River School Board is unique, not just because of what I've heard, but because of you are inevitably unique, because you have a unique set of circumstances here, different from anyone else in Florida, so your policies are going to be somewhat different as well. You may adapt or adjust or revise these policies. If you have policies in Indian River which you prefer to our templates, we'll take those policies and insert them in the templates. The only thing that's not negotiable here is the numbering system. We have over 1,150 clients in 7 states. Part of our service to each of these clients is a semi-annual update where we tell you what the legislature has done to you lately, what the federal government has done to you lately, the rules have changed which will require you to change policies. For 1,150 clients, federal changes are the same. For the 16 clients in Florida, the state law changes are the same for all 16 clients. So we refer to one policy number for all 16 clients or one policy number for all 1,150 clients. So the policy numbers are not negotiable. You will have to learn new policy numbers. Other than that, these policies are all negotiable. We think they are pretty good ideas. They're a pretty good place to start. Many school boards adopt these policies without much change. Some school boards change them beyond recognition. We are not offended if that happens. It just takes Frankie a little longer to input. It's a lot easier for her just to press the save button, and save it the way it is. But if we change it, we're happy to change it. We have no pride of authorship. We're not wedded to any of these policies. So, do you have questions about the process? One more thing before I start. The way we usually proceed is that because you've had these policies for some time, the hope is that you've had a chance to review the templates. Our tendency is, or our practice is, to take the first section, the 010 section, 0100, and say to you, do you have questions? Now, the other way we can do it is we can go through and read each one of these word for word. That will take a lot of time. The timeline is yours, not ours. We do not have a time when we feel you must finish. You guys decide when you want to be finished. And if we go through these word for word, it will take more time. That's fine with us. We'll come back here as often as we need to. So having said that, if you have questions about the process before we get into the substance. Anyway, Mr. Chairman.
Nine. Mrs. Disney.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Do we adopt the sections as we go along, or do we wait and do it as a whole?
I'm sure your school board attorney would advise you that we cannot adopt anything today because we're in a workshop.
No. I'm sorry. I didn't make myself clear. I didn't expect that we would adopt it at a workshop, but are we going to wait until the package is completely finished before we adopt
any section? Oh, good question. Yes, ma'am. Excellent question. I misunderstood your question. We have recommended, and in every district in Florida, and I think every district in the other six states, we recommend that you adopt them in one fell swoop. And at the same time, simultaneously rescind your current policies. The reason for that is because many of these policies are related to other policies, are consistent with other policies, and if you adopt some and not others, you may have others that are now inconsistent with the policies you've just adopted. And if you, your policies, you have a crosswalk between our policies and yours. When you adopt some of our policies, they will affect some of your policies, which, if we don't rescind them, will now be potentially in conflict or at least in duplication. So, long-winded answer to your question, the way we recommend it is that we go through all the workshops, workshop every policy until the board is satisfied with all of the sections, and we work them until you're satisfied. Then we put them aside at the next session. At the end of the session, we come to the board, and it's advertised pursuant to the APA. You have your first and second reading, and we adopt and rescind.
Thank you.
A couple of exceptions to that process may occur. There are several policy issues that are coming to bear currently. One of them has to do with your acceptable use policy with regard to using technology by students as well as by faculty and staff in the district. We have worked with the staff here, and Bruce has been using and refining the two policies that we have that speak to that technology acceptable and safe use requirement that is coming from the Children Internet Protection Act and also the E-rate auditors that have been visiting school districts and others throughout the state. So as some compliance issues come up, your staff have been looking to us for assistance in and templates and language that will address those specific compliance issues. So I would suspect any policy questions that come in the next several months would be consistent with what we're looking at and will be presenting in workshop and recommending as part of the package adoption.
Sure. Thank you. I had two concerns because our policies tend to be grouped sort of departmentally, and that isn't consistent with the way yours is. And the other thing is that we have some new policies that are going to need to be adopted fairly soon, and I didn't want to wait until the
end.
Thank you.
Ms. Jimenez?
Yeah, just as a point of clarification, when you say we adopt them all together, you mean by chapter, or do you mean all the entire
book?
So we're going to have to wait until we get the recommendations from staff and so forth, and
yes,
the entire book.
Yes, except for those exceptions that Pat has mentioned and others which may come up, where you may see a need to immediately adopt a change in policy. That will not be a problem. That will not be a problem. Other questions?
Ready to get started.
Okay. the definition section will change as we proceed. The definition section is flexible. There are some sections do you have any questions or comments concerning the definition section?
Ms. Jimenez.
Yeah, I do have a question. This is more for clarification. When you look at the description for district-based non-instructional administrators, and you list the classification, that's on page 205.
It's up on the screen now.
Okay. You don't mention pro tech or confidential managerial. Where do those fall in there? Since that is language that we use a lot. Where does that language come in? Because I don't see it anywhere in our definitions.
That's an administrator definition.
pro-tech and managerial are, would not be considered administrators. So we would need to clarify that information in a different definition or further back in the personnel policy.
So that would be in the chapter for personnel.
That,
right?
That
doesn't have to be in chapter one.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And to the extent that we need to change definitions, we'll just come back and add, and we probably need to make a note that pro-tech and managerial is the question. Is that right?
Confidential manager.
Confidential.
But those are non-administrative positions.
Okay.
Mr. Gress, did you have...
I just wanted to be sure that I understood some of the definitions and how they would be used, because I think it's kind of difficult to start with a definition where you're not sure how it's used further back in 100 other chapters.
Yeah.
The on this same page, right underneath the due process definition, you have a definition of a full board. And I just want to be sensitive to how we define the full board, because we want to know in the future for, say, a termination hearing, how is the phrase full board used in other rules so that if we need to tweak it, because I want to be sensitive to some termination hearings that are held by this board. It's just a majority of the board present, a quorum, and you can take action. Board administrator termination hearing, the language in the statute says it is the full board that has the hearing. So I just want to understand how we use that phrase full board and if we're somehow limiting what we can and can't do in the future.
We'll see in the sections to follow how that will apply, but a broad answer to your question would be that the authorized number of voting members entitled to govern would be three.
So you use the phrase full board more like a quorum.
Yes.
Okay, so it could be interchangeable.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I thought you were through. No, you finish, and then I'll go.
I was going to skip on to another one.
Okay, I'd like to speak on this.
Yes, ma'am.
And I thank you very much for bringing that up, because I think that if it is not well defined, when someone goes to look at it, they could interpret it, including someone on the legal side, as a full board, saying a full board. So I would like to see something in that definition of a full board to be representative of our concerns.
Okay. There. One of the reasons why the words are carefully chosen there, authorized number, is, as I'm sure your attorney would agree, there are sometimes, as I recall, there are sometimes when a supermajority of the board is required to act, and there are other times when a simple majority is required to act. So trying to be specific about a majority would be misleading. That's why you use the word authorized, because in some cases it is a majority which is authorized, and in other cases it's a supermajority.
Mrs. Johnson.
As a follow-up to my question, thank you very much. I just want an assurance from you and from our board attorney that somewhere in the future we are not going to have a challenge to an issue that we have ruled on with three people.
Yeah.
To where I'm trying to safeguard the actions which we take, and I have learned in my recent history that if it is only implied, it is subject to challenge, and that's why I would like an assurance from you, and more especially, not that I don't get the Esquire on there, but more especially from our paid board attorney, and I'm sorry, Mr. Pegler, I didn't refer to you at all.
Thanks. I'm used to that today.
But I would like an assurance that we are not, that this is not going to be interpreted by someone else's attorney.
Right.
When a matter has come before us, and there have only been three of us who have made a decision.
We'll see if we can modify that definition to address those legitimate concerns.
And I appreciate that, Ms. Young, because I would not be continuing on this issue if I did not see the potential of harm
Understood.
To our district.
Understood.
Ms. Menez?
I was just going to address that also, because when you look at authorized number of voting members, we're all five authorized to vote, and so it's just very vague. Is it the five? Is it the quorum? Is it the supermajority? And I think that's a good point, Mr.
Okay. I agree. I don't know if it would be easier just to take that out. Do you need to have the full board and a definition, or
that's a good point.
Area, can you just say a quorum or a supermajority, or instead
that's
of
a
having?
Good suggestion.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah, I'll recommend a Ramsey.
There you go.
We're comfortable with taking it out because we do address the kind of majority.
You do throughout. So
all right, you specific do. Areas. So let's just
perfect.
Let's just take it out.
Do you have Mr. Gresta? You had some other.
The next one is actually the next definition. There's two definitions. One's for major tangible personal property, and then a few definitions lower. It's minor tangible personal school property. And my question really had to do with what value are you talking about as being defined in Florida statute? Is that the $5,000 value set out in 274, or are you referring to some other value, dollar value?
The assumption is that the the reason we don't have a specific value in there is because they changed the statute, and if they change the statute,
yes.
Then we have to change the rule. We have to go through the first and second reading. So it is intended that's the $5,000 number.
Okay. And so that's probably going to be something that our purchasing department will want to take a look at closer in their portion of the rules to see if they want to change that up or down. But okay.
Other questions on the definition section? If you would scroll down, Frankie, to principal and superintendent. There was another question.
Mr. Gresta.
And I had a question on that as well, but the next one, kind of going in order, was the parent-guardian definition. Right there, the statutory definition of parent-guardian, when we're talking about the ability to enroll students and have someone do various things with regard to students, is much broader than this definition. I don't want to get confused that these are the only people that we can refer to as parents or guardians. The statutory definition is much broader than that. How do we use this?
Well, it is much broader than that in some areas, but as far as having legal rights, I think that's how this is limited. You are absolutely right. There are some that are so expensive. You just live in the same house.
Watch that. Yes. I mean, we're running into more and more
guardian,
of that.
I don't think if you're just living in the same house, you have equal legal rights. You have some rights as far as that's concerned, but not so.
I mean, we have people bringing notarized statements that they guardianship is given over to, you know, and this kind of implies you have to have a court.
Yeah, couldn't you just say as defined by statute instead?
Well,
like you do that in other places, and if there's doubt about that, as defined in statute and cite the statute.
As Mr. Gresta points out, or suggests by her question, it is defined differently in different statutes. That's part of the problem. There is not a single definition by statute. Now, what we do in the areas where parent guardians are referred to in our policies is we define them there as they are defined in the particular statute which is being applied by that policy. So it may be appropriate for us to consider deleting this one too, and only dealing with it, although this is a pretty important definition. It may be that we would want to take the broadest possible, but then perhaps, Suzanne, we may give some guardians more rights than they're entitled to.
Is it possible, and because I'm not familiar with how all of your other policies kind of work together, is it possible, rather than putting this definition in this location, to move it and have it more, you know, specific definitions for when we're dealing with an ESD student? Because I know IDEA and federal regulations certainly put a lot of, you know, requirements on us, but when we're dealing with enrollment, the ability of someone to enroll a student, it's, you know, whoever has the student physically, you know, put them in school.
whereas when we're talking about discipline, it's slightly different. I mean, I get it that you really are trying to cover a lot of things with this definition, but I'm just concerned that if a principal sees that, well, it says a parent is only these three categories, and you don't fit there, so I don't want to put us in a situation of one of our employees looking at that and saying, I can't deal with you, you don't fit one of those categories.
All right, we'll hold this one. We'll put it on hold, and as we go through the policies, we will look at how we have defined it in the respective policies, and then we'll see if we can expand this definition or modify it to make sure we cover
thank
all the
questions. Perfect. Thank you. I'm not trying to make this more confusing than it already is.
Good question.
I brought that up, too.
Did you have a question?
We're currently using
the statute
1000.21. What is that? What does that one say? I don't know how to use that.
That particular statute is the broad, if you'll remember a couple of years ago, the legislators revised the definition of parent and guardian and made it as broad as humanly possible. And they include phrases such as any person in a parental relationship to a student, which picks up all of your step relationships to students. And then they also say any person exercising supervisory authority over a student in place of the parent, which is could be, you know, anybody on the face of the earth, which we typically use this definition of parent when we're talking about enrolling a student, having someone come in and help make educational decisions for a student. We hedge away from this definition when we're talking about an exceptional ed student because the federal law tells us that we really have to be dealing with the parent or guardian. If the student is over 18 years of age, then the rights, you know, apply to them personally, so they have to actually go out and get a court order that says my biological parent can make decisions. So it's very confusing, but this definition of parent that we currently use is the broadest possible one. It kind of lets us get our arms around all of our students, bring them in, and once we get them in and get them placed and in programs, then we have to kind of parse out. The other huge issue is the Florida High School Athletic Association. This definition of parent is going to make them ineligible for athletics. So once we're looking at them for athletics, we have to then look at FHSAA regulations. So, Mrs. Disney, it really is a very complicated, I hate to make this more complicated than it is, but it's a complicated issue of how we define parent-guardian. Depending on how we're looking at the student.
And federal law defines them differently than state law.
Oh, yes.
So.
Out of curiosity, I have a follow-up question about your comment. And then what happens to our students? We do have many students who are in homes where the parents are gay. What is the definition for those parents? Because, of course, there's no marriage for them. They may be in a civil union, which may not be recognized in the state. So where do they fall in this description?
We would look to the birth certificate of the student. That birth certificate will list a parent, and that's the parent we would look at. That parent may have listed additional people who have rights to have access to records, actually right to pick the student up, right to attend meetings with teachers. So we look to the birth certificate. That helps us define who it is that we look to for answers, and then we look to that parent, whoever's listed, to then tell us who else has access or the rights to have information on
and if they're adopted, then it's the current.
There's paperwork issued from an adoption that says this is the parent.
Okay. And then to follow up, you mentioned something about your athletic association having a different definition for parent. Can you clarify that? How could they have their own unique interpretation?
It's athletics.
Yes, Mrs. Jimenez.
It's our religion. I'm sorry.
Yes, please. Here's an example. You have a student living with Dr. Adams, who is the biological parent. And for whatever reason, Dr. Adams signs appropriate paperwork to say, my student is actually going to live with his or her aunt Lanham for this school year. And they live in different school zones. So the question for athletics is whether this is recruitment. Mm-hmm. Did they recruit the student from the biological mom's zone to the aunt's zone to win the basketball game or whatever? So you look at it differently with regard to athletics. And with this very broad definition of parent, I'm not saying it happens in this district, but it does happen in school districts where students suddenly have this paperwork signed and they're now living with an aunt or an uncle or a grandmother or whatever. And so you have to look at it to see if it is, in fact, a recruitment issue that would make them ineligible to play.
And just, I mean, this is fascinating. Just as a follow-up,
and
you
so
know,
we
have these hypothetical situations happening with kids that do that same kind of finagling to get into their school of choice. We are not as meticulous in following up on that as the athletic folks, you know, because we know that that happens, too. That kids are going to schools that they're not zoned for because they're living with the aunt or the uncle, and you know, we just say, well, show us proof.
Sure, give us a notarized statement.
I just think it's fascinating because some folks are really adamant. And
yeah, and the broad statement allows you to bring a notarized statement in saying that I have given the guardianship over to the aunt or the uncle. We have a lot of that anymore.
Yeah.
No,
go ahead.
Thank you. What I'm wondering is if we were to use the narrowest definition of parent for our definition, and then we could cite the places where the broader definition is acceptable.
That's exactly what we've done. This is the narrowest definition.
For instance, who can call in sick for the student would be a broad definition, where who could sign the athletic forms would be the narrowest definition. So should we, for safety, should use the narrowest definition and then where it's appropriate, say where the broader definition is?
That's one of the approaches that we're going to look at as we go through each section where parent is defined. We'll compare that definition to this definition and see if we need to tweak this one, or whether, as you suggest, it was our intent to have this be the narrowest definition expanded where it is expanded by statute, or where it's permitted to be expanded by policy.
Okay, then.
My concern for this is that the school, who is looking for a definition, go to definitions. They're trying to resolve an issue at the school site. They go first to the definitions. They see this. This doesn't tell me I need to go anywhere else, you know, but it gives me the narrowest definition. So you're making a decision based on this definition.
Well, one of the nice things about this service that you have is that it's word searchable. So if you were to look up parent, it would take you to the definition section, but it would also take you to every other policy where parent is
which
described.
That's really good.
And you can see then how it would work in each one. Go ahead.
Another important aspect to this very issue is the importance of, once policies are adopted and in place, making staff aware of those policies and training them
right.
in the implementation and the application and the differences in the definition in one context versus another.
Yeah.
As they apply the role of parent to an enrollment situation versus an attendance situation versus a discipline
right.
situation.
Yeah, I was just going to ask about that. How would they know? But it really is going to hinge upon the appropriate and consistent training.
Absolutely.
Dr. Adams?
And what I just heard you say, part of the training is the word search to let you know that parent or guardian shows up many places, and so as part of the training, which that's something that we don't have now, to those connections, you know, so that would really be big.
We are sure it's not the case in Indian River, but in many districts, there are policies which are not consistent with state law. They're inconsistent with each other.
Mm-hmm.
They were last adopted and revised in 1974. They have no bearing at all on the real world today. And when we're finished with this, we will have a set of policies which we warrant are consistent with federal and state law and do reflect appropriately on the real world. Those policies are not worth anything unless we then... They would insulate you from nothing unless we had the training for the staff to implement the policies. And one of the services we provide in addition to the policies and the updates is to help you with procedures.
Right. We're going to be working, after we adopt these policies, we're going to be working with the superintendent and her staff to develop procedures to implement your policies. And the training and the implementation of those policies and the utilization of those procedures is absolutely essential to protecting yourselves and delivering the service that you provide to children. So long, Pat's right on the money. This is one of the things that training is so important. And there are places in the statutes which say which require you to train. So the legislatures occasionally see things correctly themselves and understand how important it is to have training.
Mrs. Johnson.
Well, and I hate to keep being the naysayer, but I really don't see what's wrong with putting one little small parens here that says, you know, reference or REF, however you do it, to say that other definitions in other areas or something. Just
yes.
Because what? And I understand if I'm going to go in and I'm going to word search parent, guardian. That's, I understand that. But if I have something here that says specifically parent, guardian, I'm not going to go any further.
We're not ruling out your suggestion as an appropriate way to do
it. I just don't think it, I don't see how that can hurt anything to let people know that there are other definitions elsewhere. And
what we are committing to you to do is each time parent is defined in the policies which you look at, we will take that definition out and we'll have those definitions all collected at the end. And then we'll see how we should best define parent, guardian here. But we will consider that as a possibility, a reference to every statute, every policy that has parent defined in.
Or just to say, see other statute, right.
See other
areas or whatever. Yes. I don't want, and I really don't, I don't want what the legislature has decided in their infinite wisdom needs to be put in there, because that's ever-changing. But and I like having a broad definition. But I also want to
understand.
I want to make it
use a
better customer service.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Principal is right below. Let's look at that one for a second, please. If you look at this definition, the last sentence. In policy, it implies the delegation of responsibilities to appropriate staff members. When it is a capital P, principal, it means principal or designee. So we don't need to say or designee each time. And when we see capital S, superintendent, it is superintendent or designee. You'll see the superintendent has an awful lot of duties in these policies. I suspect that Dr. Adams will delegate some of these duties to her staff.
Mr. Greston?
And that was really my point. I just wanted board members to notice that, not only in this definition, but in the superintendent definition, that it's always going to mean principal or designee. So if for some reason you only want to look to the principal for something, we need to be very specific about that.
That'll be a lowercase p. When it's a lowercase p or lowercase s, that means the superintendent or the principal.
Ask a question. How do we specify that so that it's, you know, black and white? That when it's a lowercase p, it does not mean the superintendent, principal, or his or her designee for future reference.
That's a good question, and we should change that policy to reflect that.
Okay. I'm fine with it. Okay.
We'll make sure that the definition indicates that a capital P is principal or designee.
Perfect.
Lowercase p is the principal.
Perfect. Ms. Jimenez, I'm sorry.
Okay, and just for clarity, when this policy is in place, are you going to do the principal / designee?
No.
So people understand that?
Nope.
Because, you know, if somebody that's not, like, in the inner circle looks at this, they're not going to know what that is. And if we're really trying to be transparent, nowhere in this paragraph is designee mentioned. And that's your capital P. And you're saying your capital P means principal or designee. So the word designee should be there.
The last sentence does not contain the word designee, but it says exactly what you said.
I know, but you need to be, if we're talking about a designee, again, I just think it's about clarity. It's about people being able to understand the language. And okay. If we're talking about a designee, why don't we just say it?
All right.
As opposed to assume that people are going to know it.
We will put in there the capital P and the principal. We'll have language which clearly indicates that the capital P means principal or designee. Other questions on the definitions? And Ms. DeBresta, is one of her more prescient statements today was that it's difficult to deal with definitions before you've looked at the entire, and I must admit that we got started on this and I just let it go on, but typically we do the definitions when we're done with this section, but we sort of put the horse before the cart, but we're getting a lot of good discussion and a lot of good suggestions on it, so that perhaps wouldn't have come out had we done it at the end. So,
and now we're on S, so we're almost done.
And we'll do the same with the definition of superintendent.
Perfect.
We'll make sure that we've got that delegation.
Mr. Gresta? Mr. Gresta.
The only other definition I just wanted to bring to the board members' attention is the very last one. It's the definition of work session or workshop. Here in Indian River, you also have roundtable discussion. So, and you treat them a little differently than a workshop. So I'm not sure if you want to include that or somehow tweak this definition to talk about that this kind of a meeting also encompasses your roundtable discussions. But I think it's important because, you know, you guys organize your meetings in a very specific way here. You've got your board meetings, you've got workshops, but you also have roundtable discussions, which are more board-directed as opposed to superintendent staff-directed.
Well, before we do that, do we also need to, because we do have executive sessions and things like that, do you need to go?
Those are actually addressed in a different rule, so hold that comment. It's
we'll
coming.
Get
it's coming.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too, and we also have discussion sessions. We're going to be having one about the referendum. So sometimes they're called discussion, sometimes they're called workshops, sometimes they're called roundtables. So maybe work sessions could be defined as one of those three, since the executive sessions are already mentioned later on.
Mrs. Disney.
I would prefer not to have those names put into policy because we've seen over the years that as we change chairs, we change the types of meetings we have, and I don't want to have to go through a policy change every time we have a new chairman.
Mrs. Johnson.
And that was going to be my point because we have seen this change definitely in the 6 years we've been on the board. We've actually seen this change as to what the focus is, and I think work sessions is all encompassing. I think it's a good umbrella. I think it says exactly what we do. Work session and a workshop, right? And we do have the other things that we do defined, and then I think as far as definition, it's fine in my opinion. But when we get into the actual policies and how we conduct and what we do and do not. Do with those and the procedures as far as what's televised or not televised, though, because those procedures could change and have changed. You know, they have been very much
fluid.
Very fluid. Very fluid.
Ms. Jimenez.
I think if that's the case, my recommendation would be that it would just be work sessions. Once you start naming workshop, that's one specific type of work session, so it should just be work sessions.
Wait.
I think when you do it that way and you have the deputy, it is basically any meeting called by the chairman for the purpose of exploring matters that constitute business of the district. And that's as broad as you can get. You can fit work session, round table, discussion group, any of it into that one. So let's just delete workshop.
Perfect.
And just use work session. And then when we have the specific bylaws, we can talk about how those will be constituted and called.
Very good.
Great.
Okay. Next number.
It will take me just a minute as I work through this to take this in the right place.
Did we?
I ended up on.
Not to go back to the parent guardian, but when I'm looking here, there's relative also. Is that?
Yeah, that's consistent.
Sorry. Is that consistent? There's no problem. Okay.
And we, just because we have walked by this today, we can walk by it again some other time.
It's okay.
We will walk back by it until you are happy that you've got it the way you want it.
going to talk about parent guardian
for a long time.
That's the truth.
The next section is the 110 section, and it begins with 111, the name of the district, officially.
Mr. Gresta.
I had a question about 0113, where we define the official address of the school board.
And we need to put the official name of the district
in
first.
Oh, sorry.
Is this the official name? We assume that the official name is the School Board of Indian River County.
It's statutory, so yes.
Statutory.
Okay.
That was easy.
We didn't know whether you were so unique that you would
copyrighted our own name. Not that I'm aware of.
And 112, we'll put Indian River there.
Unless you would like to take jurisdiction over another county.
Now 113.
The official address. Is there a reason why we include that in policy? And the only reason why I say that is because we were only able to negotiate a 5-year extension of your lease of this building, so I'm assuming you're not going to be here too much longer. You'll be finding another home, or you'll
place
be in your
ball.
Cars. I'm just curious why we would put the address in the policy.
Because in the interest of transparency, if someone wants to know where to find you, this policy will give you that address. That will be the same address that we use in all the sections of the policy. It's in legal matters. Now, obviously, you can find that address on your website and anywhere else. You're not required to have it in your policy. That's another point that I'll mention to you.
That's a policy change we'll be happy to make.
All right.
Yes. When the time comes, that's right. I like that.
I sense that there's a consensus if you put the current address in there, you're not going to be reluctant to change it.
That's right.
So the current address is?
1990.
Yeah, 1990 25th Street. Vero Beach, 32960.
Now, unless we tell you, you must have this policy, none of these policies are required. To the extent that we recommend them, we are telling you that they are consistent with state law. But you have to have a policy on your address? No, you don't. We recommend it because that's a good way of doing business, we think, but that is simply an opinion on our part. To the extent that they are consistent with Florida law, the question may be, well, some districts like to have, they're tired of a policy book that's this thick. They want one that's this thick. So the way to accomplish that is to have a few policies in each section which say, for example, in curriculum, we will comply with all of the laws regarding curriculum. That's our policy. That's legal, unless the statutes tell you you must have a policy on a particular, and we'll tell you which ones those are. The other extreme is, for every mandate, and I've just finished reading, it's just been a wonderful experience, I've just been finished reading this entire thing. And identified every mandate in here which is required of school districts. And then we're going to connect each of those mandates to a policy. So the other way to do this would have been to look through this manual, this law, and for every mandate have a policy on it. That would be this thing. So the truth lies somewhere in between. You need to decide what policies you wish to include which will assist your staff in understanding their responsibilities, legal and professional, in delivering the service, and you need to think about policies which go to the transparency of the district. You need to give the policies that give the public an opportunity to understand what their rights are and what your obligations are, so they don't have to look in this dumb book here and see all these wonderful examples of legislative wisdom. So that's a long with an introduction to why do we have to have this policy? You don't unless we say you do. But if you want the policy because it provides information to your staff and to the public, we tell you that these policies which we put up here are consistent with state law.
If we delete just procedurally a definition or a rule, does it mess up the NEOLA numbering, or do
no.
we just take out, like, we will no longer have a 0118?
That's
it
correct.
Won't say intentionally deleted or anything like that. It's just, well, because I don't want people to think, why. You know, like, sometimes when you're doing the contract, it's gone. Okay. I just wanted to know. So
there will
be, what's going on over
there? There will be a new 118. The 118 will be gone.
It'll be gone.
119 will be
perfect.
Next.
Okay.
There will be no 118.
Thanks. Okay. Miss Jimenez.
All right. I think your explanation is interesting. I think we run across the same thing when we look at our contracts, and things are already in statute, and then we fill in all this repetition of things that are already in statute, and we have to abide by. And I seriously, you know, just as one board member, I don't understand why we would need to have our name, our geographical district, our address, and, you know, and even the seal information in our policies manual. It's apparent that we're in Indian River County. It's obvious that we're the Indian River County School District, and you know we need to just have our serious policies in here. I don't think these things need to be policy, and that's just me. I just think it's superfluous, and it's a waste of time, really.
Mrs. Disney.
Well, I kind of wanted to keep this to myself, but I got to tell you, when I was first elected to the board, I couldn't get the same answer twice about what this board is called. So, this is all the business.
I'm sorry.
So, I think we should.
Don't be sorry. Your firm helped us tremendously, because we did go, the two of us did go literally, line by line. And we had things that were completely inappropriate. Completely inappropriate for the world we live in today. I mean, we had references to adhering to the best Christian practices in our board policies. Absolutely unacceptable. And that's true. It's actually in two places. So, I don't have a problem with identification. I don't have a problem with 0118 purpose of the board. I think that people have to... Oh, gosh, we're going to go against that.
Mr. Gresta.
But I don't see a problem with having identification, and I don't think it doesn't take up a whole lot of room,
no.
And I think it sets the tone for who you are, and I really don't have a problem with putting down an address, because I will tell you, I get a lot of things on the web, and there's no address, and sometimes there's not even a phone number. The only way you can communicate with some of these folks in the state of Florida, Department of Education, is through electronics. That's the only way. Or corporate. And I deal a lot with corporate, or I have dealt a lot with corporate in the past. And it's impossible to communicate with them.
Do you think that perhaps is intentional?
Absolutely. Well, what I want to know is the one that I got that said, thank you for your email, but because we were overloaded, we could not download your email. Well, how'd you know I sent you an email? I mean, that to me is amazing. And that was that was Division of Corporations.
The point that Johnson and Jimenez have both made are legitimate talking points.
Sure.
Less is best for some, and erring on the side of giving more information than necessary is also a legitimate point. And as we go through the policies, bring it up again. I mean, decide whether or not you want a policy on this. One of the things that policies do, though, is give a uniform approach that everyone understands and can look at and see when the institutional wisdom leaves here, the policies and procedures remain, and if they are explicit and clear, then the next group who come in will be using the same practices as the ones who left. So,
Dr. Adams.
The other thing I've found over the years is, I mean, philosophically, we used to say less was better in terms of the policy. But now it's more mandated. There are so many pieces that are mandated that you have less flexibility in terms of how you implement that policy. And that's my concern, is we don't have those pieces in there because it's we have little flexibility
and
anymore.
And you're being held accountable for those very specific mandates.
So it has changed over the years in terms of giving yourself some flexibility and not.
So you're looking for direction?
On the including identification?
Yes, I think we should leave it here because we're still going to find places around the district where we're referred to as Indian River County School District. We can point to policy. It's right there in black and white, and we can ask that it be incorrect.
And you know, with our service, since everything is online, it's not like when I was a principal and I had a parent come and I had an issue, I had to get out that book like this and go through it. With our service, you don't realize the magnitude because it's so easy to get the information that you need as a principal or a parent or a board member. You know, you can find it that quick.
As a matter of fact, we recommend that you only have perhaps two or three hard copy policy manuals. Only two or three. One superintendent, one the board, and one the school board attorney, board office. Because, as you know, I'm sure, when you have numerous policy manuals and you have changes in policy, some people slip those pages in and some don't. And I'll wager you that when you have 14 different policy manuals, each one will be somewhat different than the other. There will not be a single one that's up to date.
Mr. Menez.
Just two final issues. Going back to, for example, the address, it takes such an inordinate amount of time to change policies. You have to have all these hearings, and we would have to do that to change our address when we move, and that's not the best use of our time. And second, there is a tremendous, you know, what Ms. Disney just said about the school district versus the school board. Another reason why I wouldn't want to see that there is because when you talk to the public, they want to say that everything is the school board, and there are so many things that are the school district, and this just perpetuates that misinformation that everything that's happening in Indian River County schools has been done by the school board, the elected officials, the school board, and that is just so not accurate. There is so much that is district driven that the board really has no purview over. So, you know, that's another reason, you know, when people talk to me, I have to constantly say, that is the district. That is the district. The board did not do that. And I think this feeds into that and further creates that misunderstanding.
Anyone else on including identification?
I think you
Mrs.
have direction.
Okay.
They have a three people direction, and we can't pull the board, so.
Right. Just wanted to see if anybody
and we
else.
Can come back to it.
Okay.
I think we need to move on.
Okay.
Anything more on the 110 series?
Yes, ma'am. Mr. Gresta.
Just with regard to the very last policy that Frankie is pulling up on the screen.
118?
Yes.
Okay.
And this is going to be a constitutional discussion. The Florida Constitution creates public education in the state of Florida, and I hate to do this, but I just don't want to waive a future legal argument if I ever have to pull it out. The second sentence, mm-hmm. where it says the system was created by and is governed by state statutes, the system was created by the Florida Constitution, mm-hmm. and I will agree with you, is governed by state statutes, but if we could insert the concept that we actually are created by the Florida Constitution. And then, board members, the very last section of this policy, subparagraph capital C, and this is a legal argument, so at any moment you can just tell me to shush and we will move on. The second full sentence, mm-hmm. where it says the board recognizes that the ultimate responsibility for public education rests with the state.
I guess you're in the next paragraph?
Yeah.
What I would submit to you is the Florida Constitution says school boards operate and control all public education within your respective district. You control public education in New River County. the Florida Constitution says the state is responsible to fund it.
Great.
It's a legal argument that at some point in the future we may have to pull out, depending upon, you know, where we are with public education and funding. And what I don't want to do is have someone pull out our rules and say, well, you don't believe the stuff that your attorney is saying. But, you know,
So how would you change this? That second sentence, I
would say the responsibility rests with the board, and the state is responsible for, you know, the adequate provision of funding or something like that.
Rests with the school board, not the state.
Delete the word state. I would actually probably delete the rest of that sentence. And if there's a reason further on in your policies that we want to refer to the state being responsible or having some authority, I mean, they are responsible for funding.
Why don't we say there in that sentence that after public education, the board recognizes that the ultimate responsibility for public education in Indian River County rests with the school board.
I would agree. Yes, thank you. That's a good clarification.
Because you don't want to be the ultimate responsible for education board, do you?
We are a good model for other schools.
Thank you.
And I do thank you for that, but I do think we want to put the funding issue in here. And as a... Well, but you are as so often Dr. Adams says also, you are expressing the board majority concerns that you have heard with all of our discussions, and they rest with the funding issue. So I think it's perfectly appropriate for you to have interpreted that so that this becomes ours, because that is a constant comment that this board makes in regards to the funding.
This board is not unique in that regard.
So where's the breakdown here? But if we could, and perhaps the two of you could work together on what that last sentence could be, because we really want that to be, or all of you.
About the funding?
The funding.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
I
guess that's in the constitution.
And then we can make note of that as when it comes back. She'll come back with something brilliant.
Do you have it there?
Well, what I would say is we just quote the Constitution.
Right.
The state shall make adequate provision for educational funding.
Yes.
I would like Mr. Gress to come back with wording for us.
What's that?
And that is now a matter of litigation, as I understand.
Yes, it is. But I...
The Constitution. That's what it is. One step further and add before the state say, in accordance with Florida Constitution, the state shall make.
I like that too.
Jeez.
He
gets it.
You get an old one.
Doesn't say much, but
when he does, it's that nugget.
Okay. That's a nice touch. Anything further in that series? All right, moving on to 120.
You have the state officers.
I went back and took a look. There's a couple different places where they define school board members as
state officers.
Yes, so I withdraw my comments.
Great. So then, that takes care then of
120.
This is one which occasionally gets a lot of work.
I have a preliminary question.
Mr. Gresta.
just as a preliminary matter, the school board recently adopted a special gift restriction policy that basically tracks the new legislation that was passed during the last session. Would this be the area where that would go, or should I hold that thought until we get to another section of your policy?
I think this is where it goes.
Okay.
We have a section on gifts for staff. But this is where it would go for board.
Okay. Then, we've just very recently adopted. Haven't used it yet that we know of.
Yeah.
I have chapter 2 pages inserted in here. Is that a mistake?
No, that's where.
Because of the crosswalk.
Yeah, that's the crosswalk. If you look at the sheet in the very front.
It's part of it addresses, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but this doesn't have anything to do with the board.
So do you just want to make a note that you'll insert our rule 1.09?
School-based management is highlighted.
Oh,
as
it falls under 1.22, I think, was the logic.
All right, anything, questions or comments on this section? Let's just go seriatim.
I'm trying to understand how 1.22 is related to 2.46.
That's under school-based management. We had a rule regarding school-based management. It was kind of a philosophical statement, if you will.
I would not think that would be in the board bylaws.
Yeah, but it's highlighted as though it's a crosswalk to.
Now, occasionally, I can tell you our crosswalk is created by our staff in Coshocton, Ohio. And they create it by matching subject areas.
Okay.
Sometimes the subject areas do not correspond to the same topics, so sometimes the crosswalk is not completely accurate. So that may have been what happened here. School-based management would not be in the board bylaws section.
Yeah. That's how the crosswalk, that's why it's there, is because of the crosswalk that was done.
So that's what we're talking about, that in this section.
Right.
I'm sure you can have that discussion in another chapter of their policy.
Yes. I'd scroll down and would bring you. There are, go on to the next one for the versions here. Member powers, I don't know if you have any questions about that. You scroll up just a second. Now, when you get the standards for boardsmanship in 0123, there are two versions. One is the National School Boards Association version, and the version 2 is the Florida School Boards Association version. And you don't have to have either. You can create your own. They are simply suggestions, places for you to jump off.
I'd like two better than one.
I do too.
I don't know of any Florida school district that has used version 1.
Yeah. Okay. I like this.
So we'll delete version 1.
Hopefully none of us will have. We won't have a resolution. Chastising. Century.
Can we go step back?
Now we're on version 2.
Slow down. Oh, sure. Do you, Miss Jimenez? Okay.
It's not clear to me about 0121 and whether or not this school SDIRC 1.01 is staying in, or what's happening.
Nothing will stay in unless you put it in here now.
Okay.
Your policies, if they're not included in the revisions that we're talking about here, will be rescinded. So if you have policies which you wish to keep, you need to let us know where they are, and we will figure out where to put them.
So SDIRC 1.01, is that being pulled out?
Yes.
Ms. Jimenez.
So if that is being pulled out,
where is it going to be prescribed when the members are voted in and out? Is that
coming?
That's coming.
Yeah.
Later.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then going back to version 2.
Version 2.
I, on the second page in K, I would prefer not to see any requirement that there be participation in FSBA activities as a, you know, as part of our bylaws. I think that is something that board members will do as they are able. But you may have a board member at some point that is not able to attend, and I just think that's a little bit too prescriptive.
Given that this is the
FSB.
Right.
There's not a requirement that we join FSBIT also.
And other districts have taken that out.
I agree.
Yeah.
Take it out.
Yeah,
so just
good call.
Stop it at in-service programs, next semicolon.
Yeah, great.
A little self-promotion.
Not that I appreciate FSB, I
right.
do, but... Scrolling down. Note here, if we add the bylaw 124, then we don't need this paragraph. So let's go down to 124, which is next.
So option one lists everything. Option two is a paragraph.
This note indicates that you could choose to replace the one you just looked at with the following, which are basically the standards which certified instructional staff are required to follow. Mm-hmm. And that's option number one. We'll scroll down, Frank, and show them how it goes to option number two. These are the same ethical standards that teachers and instructional staff are required to follow.
Ms. DeGresta, do you want?
Yeah, I understand why a board may adopt something like this to essentially set out the same rules for themselves as for instructional staff. There is an entire chapter of Florida statutes telling you, as elected officials, what you can and cannot do.
Right.
It's chapter 112. This board has typically followed that ethical chapter very closely, very seriously. Adopting standards for instructors isn't necessarily relevant. And I don't want to, not that you're not smart people, but I don't want to confuse you by saying, here are your ethics, when in addition to this rule on ethics, you have the other statutory chapter 112 to also comply with. I don't believe there would be any problems, but I want to be clear, this is not, these are teacher or instructors, people that touch students every single day. Yes, you do touch students' lives, but in from a policy perspective, not from a day-to-day, I'm in the classroom educating students perspective. I would suggest that you stick with Chapter 112, but it's not illegal for you to adopt other ethical. I would say rather than this that we put in your gift rule that you just adopted consistent with the last legislative session. But you are free to, of course, you know, govern yourselves and list out the behaviors that you like or don't like.
Mrs. Disney.
I would like to keep the highest standard in here. You know, we have made a point, even before we knew it was a statute, to go through the training with our school board attorney immediately upon election prior to taking a seat. And we have
as a board, try to lead the way and can set an example for the rest of the district. So I appreciate spelling out the highest standard.
So I understand. Are you suggesting that we leave in or take out?
I say we should leave in option one, but that we need to modify it to reflect the change that we have in our gift policy.
All right. Now, if you leave in option one, then you can look back at 123, 0123, back up to the top there, the FSBA. You can decide whether or not you wish to have to retain 0123 and 0124, or delete 123 and just use 124.
Ms. Jimenez,
those are two different things.
Yes, they are.
And the boardmanship applies directly to us in our role as board members, and I would want to see that.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree. Yes. And I think keeping them both can do no harm. But I'm sensitive also to what your attorney suggests. I don't think that anything in 123 or 124 will be in conflict with 112. And I think, in fact, 112 goes beyond some of these.
I don't like 124 because I think it appears, it's not consistent with the previous provisions of 123. It's sort of out of place when you read it, and you're trying to figure out how that gels with the responsibilities of a school board member.
Yeah.
So if we're trying, just for purposes of being a little more concise, I would like to take out 124. From where it is right now under the board member standards.
Now, if you take out 124, then this note above is applicable. This is new statute 2 years ago, which is a very important paragraph which must be included in our opinion.
I would do that as, and can we include that then as a RS? Under 123.
That would be the last paragraph of 123.
I'd prefer to do it that way. Okay.
That would be the last paragraph of 123.
Okay. Mrs. Johnson, I'm sorry.
And I agree, and that because I'm looking at these, and so many of these refer to professional, mm-hmm. professional. Mm-hmm. I am not professional. I'm setting a higher standard for myself than what we have at school-based. It's a different standard. As Ms. Disney said, we feel as though we have led the way in many instances with some of the things that we have such as salary reductions and other things that we have done. And I'm just looking at these. I'm looking at 23, 24. I'm looking at, it just goes on and on with 16, with 17, with all these things that keep referring to professional. I am not an educational professional.
Mm-hmm.
That is not, even though I have school experience, but that is not that is a different set of standards for a different group. I don't feel those are my standards.
I'm getting a sense that we're leaning towards deleting 124, and without hearing any contrary, I think what we can do is delete 124, delete this note, add the paragraph to 123 below, and add the gift rule at the appropriate place.
Yes. Perfect.
So we'll take out 124.
And as if I could just follow up on this, and thank you very much, Mr. Young. But as an additional comment on that, these are entailed for the profession.
Right.
And if you look at these, I don't think that what the school board members do should be limited. And I find these limited if they were to be adopted by us.
Ms. Jimenez.
Okay, I agree with what you're saying. However, when you looked at 0124, which I think the standards for our teachers are not the standards that we need to have at this point, but I would like to see language regarding the standards of ethical conduct as they are alluded to in 2.17 of the standard
of the policy that we currently have. Even though it's not in Chapter 1, we're talking about boardsmanship. We're talking about the paragraph that you said we must have in there. And there, I don't see any language in here about us following those ethical expectations that we do training on every year. So that's the piece missing.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, the last sentence there, which would be included, addresses your last point, but it does not address the language to which you have referred. You're required to complete training on the standards established herein upon election and annually thereafter.
Mrs. Johnson?
And I understand that, but we're trying to make this our own.
Yes.
And it is important to us as board members who set exactly what she's talking about as a standard fairly recently, that we want to see language that holds us accountable, and we want to be the ones to say we will be held accountable.
And that language is where?
It's in
2.17, which talks about ethics policy.
All right, we'll bring that up.
2.17 is...
It's really geared towards employees.
Yeah.
The reference specifically, though, should be the Florida Code of Ethics for Public Officers and Employees.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Chapter 112.
112
that's
is what I was
saying. Right.
Yes,
that's
what I referenced.
Right. So we're not talking about 2.17.
Yes. No.
Not specifically,
not
but the concept
is. But 112 is what we were talking about.
And 112 is referenced right here, 112.313.
Where?
Down below.
Yeah, but
now
you want the language.
Oh, Ms. Jimenez.
Yeah, I think, again, if we're talking about clarity and transparency, if I am a member of the public that is concerned with the ethical behavior of a school board member, for example, I would be better served if in the text there was a mention to the Florida Code of Ethics for elected officials, because I will not know that 112 is the statute that I'm talking about. And I think it's in the interest of clarity, because we know it, we hear it all the time, but the public doesn't know that. And that's kind of what I'm...
I agree. Was that Mrs. Disney?
Well, in 0123, letter B, it refers to bring about desired changes through legal and ethical procedures. So we just expand that to ethical procedures as described in
Florida Statute 112.
Mm-hmm.
That would solve the problem.
I see a distinction, though. This is stating, as board members, we are going to use ethical procedures, but I think the other statute is more like the code of ethics that we follow. So I see a slight distinction.
It does. If you go down to R, it does say comply with all duties and responsibilities set forth in the K-20 and the code of ethics for public officers.
Okay.
Is that, I just noticed that.
Oh,
okay.
112,
or just a reference then.
It's 112.313 is the reference at the bottom. And that deals with solicitation of gifts, by the way.
But we've made a tougher standard for ourselves.
For the gifts.
All right.
Could we add?
Yes.
Okay. Does that, Ms. Jimenez, I just noticed that.
Thank
kind
you.
Of.
Are we going to add an S in that?
Are we going to do, we'll have an S and a T, because we're going to do, S will be
the transmittal of a report of alleged misconduct.
Right. And then T, we could do our school board policy regarding gifts, or do you want to not do it under standards for board membership?
I think it should be a separate.
Separate?
Yes,
okay.
Separate. Do you have, because it was just recently enacted, I'm going to hand to you.
And that way we're not changing the template. We're just adding something else.
We're just adding
put that as an additional rule at the end of this section. However, don't want another.
We can't change.
Can you
number.
Add a number? do we have to give a number up?
We're not allowed to create numbers here at this table.
No,
okay.
No,
that
I
was created
understand.
By Evelyn in
Koshaka. Okay. I don't want to upset Evelyn.
We don't even.
Yeah, two different things. I heard an S and a T. I'm doing an S and a T.
We'll just do the S.
We're just doing an S.
What is the S?
We'll be your. Option two, the school board hereby establishes the principles enumerated in the principles of professional conduct.
I think that's at the very, very end.
The very end. Is that, wait, am I right?
No, sorry.
I'm sorry.
It's Florida Statute 1001.42.
Right.
paren 7.
Okay, page 4, page 5, on page 6, we're going to keep that paragraph pursuant to Florida Statute 1001.42. We're up at page 6 of 11.
We've already done that, yes.
So that's included.
Okay.
Yes.
We're going to delete version 2.
Right.
And then we'd like to add in a section, if Evelyn will give us a number. No?
Stop talking.
Okay. Please. Say that again.
We're not deleting version 2 of standards for boardmanship. We're keeping that.
Right, we're deleting standards of ethical conduct on page 6 of 11.
Right,
0124.
Yeah, there you go.
Right.
All right, time out. Let's get back.
That's what I said. But it is version 2.
It is version 2.
It says option. Oh, you're right.
I would think they were keeping this one.
0124.
You're right.
But they're not keeping this one. Standards of ethical conduct.
All right, now. Are we keeping this one?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Let's scroll down. Here's the last paragraph of that one.
Correct.
And we're deleting version 2.
Correct. Yes.
No, I'm, we'll see.
We're not deleting version 2.
End of version 2. That is version 2. That's what I was getting.
Standards of ethical conduct.
On down to 11.
We're deleting that.
There you go.
We're deleting 1, 2, 4.
Yes.
All right, now go back up to 1, 2, 3, Frank.
I don't think there's an S.
She did have
it. No, go down to your next page. You inserted it, the letter S on your next page. I don't think there's an S. But there is this paragraph.
There is, because it's going to say
paragraph. It's not a lettered paragraph. It's just the final paragraph of the rule.
Okay, so she's not going to bump it up.
Will that be after this pursuant or before it?
The gift rule?
I think it should be before.
Shouldn't it be separately?
Another number?
Yes, a completely separate rule number. To
0, 1, 2.
Whatever.
Whatever Evelyn says.
We don't
whatever
pick Evelyn. The
you don't number.
Evelyn's going to give you the number.
A separately numbered rule that sets out their gift rule.
All right, and that would be under 1, 2, 3. It would be a 1, 2, 3.01, perhaps.
Right. However you wish to number it.
It's 1, 2, 4. It's not being used.
1, 2, 4. Yeah, 1, 2, 4.
But can you replace? Right. So you can replace 1, 2, 4.
We don't pick the number.
We don't pick the number.
We don't
pick the number.
All right. So we will add that.
So to be clear, are we adding the statement about misconduct by instructional personnel? 20123 as a separate letter.
The misconduct of instructional personnel.
Yeah, on
that's
page
what was
6
S.
of 11. It's right before the 0124.
Yes. Is it right here? Are you talking about this?
So that's going to be added as a letter to 123 or as a separate number?
Final paragraph. It's the final paragraph of that rule. It's not lettered or numbered.
Okay.
It's just the final concluding paragraph of that rule.
Okay. So that's 0123.
Yes.
And then our gift rule is going to be another number.
Yes.
Correct.
Got it. Okay.
That's an important section.
That's a biggie. That was a huge section.
Yeah. So in the next section, maybe we won't all speak the same language, because we were having trouble with that one.
Did we... Is B on page 11 of 11, option number 2?
Deleted. Yeah.
Thanks. Too many options. That's what cool.
You've got to figure it out. That's
okay,
good.
Okay, right, because we took out 1, 2, 4 completely. Okay.
And then wait till we do policies in the other county, and then you'll really be.
I don't know if they can see.
Okay.
All right. I will go back and put this in.
Oh, we wanted to watch you type.
I may already have this.
Yes.
Okay. You will.
Yeah. We've tried to.
You can just copy it and paste it rather than watch.
Right. Right.
It's fun.
Okay.
It's okay. I pushed the pause button. Now I can push play again.
Yes. Go.
Now we're functions.
Functions.
All right. Next number.
Zero one three. Oh, ranking makes her notes. That's what I hear. Have to forgive me. I said twelve hours in the car with the baby. And I drove from the baby home to the baby in the rain. That was, oh, by yourself? Yes. Oh, that's a long drive. Yeah. That's a long drive. Quite the feat. Bless you. All right. 1:30 section.
Questions or comments?
Mr. Gresta.
The very top one where we were talking about the board determines policies for its governance and its employees and students on grounds or premises. Can we expand? I'm not saying that this necessarily defines our jurisdiction. But we actually have jurisdiction beyond just our grounds and premises to also board-approved or sanctioned programs, which may not be on your property, but you have the jurisdiction to discipline employees or students. Is that concept addressed in another area? Am I being a little too persnickety to be sure that we're not limiting our jurisdiction? Well, thank you.
I haven't heard that word.
I see no harm in striking on its grounds or premises, and
okay.
We do address those in other sections.
I thought you would. Okay.
Great.
So we're going to strike on its grounds or premises.
Yeah.
Seems limiting.
Would it, out of curiosity, when we passed the rules previously and the statute changes, or the actual numbering, which I don't know how frequently that occurs, but do you have to revise your rules and have a public hearing and all that when there's a statutory change that you've referenced in your rule?
If all we're talking about is the number, they
right.
they moved a rule or a statute from one chapter to another and the statute did not substantively change. What NEOLA is proposing at some point when we get to it is those types
right,
of non-substantive changes do not require the rulemaking, that you can simply do it ministerially.
Yeah. And that has passed muster with the Florida JAPSE Judicial Administrative
the Joint Administrative
Procedures Committee.
It's kosher.
And when you get our updates twice a year, those that are just technical changes, it will tell you that so you don't have to
take it through the process.
Oh, that's
okay.
Good.
Thanks. Ms. Jimenez.
Looking at page 3 of 11A, I really like that last paragraph where it states that the notice shall include a brief and concise explanation of the proposed policy's purpose and effect, the estimate of economic impact, and so forth. I think that that is really important when we're looking at new policy to have a clear understanding of the intent and the cost of policy. So I like seeing that in there.
We actually do have a cover sheet whenever a new policy is added to the agenda. There's a cover sheet that you fill out that does require that information. So when you first see the change to the board rule, you see that cover sheet. That's part of it.
That's what I was going to say. We already do that.
Right.
We don't do that as part of that explanation, but it is part of the origination of the policy. We have all that.
Mr. Gresta?
On the prior page, on page 2 of 11, down at the bottom of the page, that subparagraph capital A, school boards are exempt by statute from submitting their rules to the Department of State. And I know here I know you can submit to them, but we do not. So I would recommend that in that paragraph capital A, the first clause through the word "and" in the second line be deleted, mm-hmm. since we don't go through the fun of the Department of State voluntarily.
No, forward of that.
Yes, that clause. And then also the very end of that language where it references the Florida Administrative Code, I think after the word policy, hyperlink from the policy, you can end it there because we do not post our proposed rules on the Florida Administrative Weekly website.
Repeat what we're changing. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Jump on the screen. Oh, okay.
So that paragraph A, that first clause, it's not a substantive change. It's more like a procedural requirement that we are not legally required to do. I would not suggest that we add more layers of procedure to ourselves unless we have to.
Thank you.
Okay. Back in the day, we had to post our rules on the Florida Administrative Weekly publication. We don't have to do that anymore, okay. Thankfully. So I was just suggesting that we take it out. Also, continuing on to paragraph B on the top of the next page, the fifth line down references the Department of State. I think you could just delete the Department of State and, since we don't.
So that would read and locations of the school district.
I guess you could take the S out of location since
and addresses.
We now only
the address and location.
Yes. Take the plurals out.
Okay. Next question or comment? Scrolling down.
Frank, you over on the keep going a little bit further. In that full paragraph that's at the bottom of the screen up there, the 1, 2, 3, the fourth line down, you have statues. Like a stone. There you go. I do that. I've got to tell you, I do that too. I miss that T.
It's spell check doesn't catch that one.
And could I? This is just a general question. In our existing policies, we have a rule that delegates authority to the superintendent to take action in the event of an emergency, not to adopt a rule, but just. If something comes up and the superintendent needs to close a school or do whatever.
We have that in 1,000 students.
Thank you.
It's a national law.
I'm sorry. It shows from time to time. My persnickety is showing.
Thoroughness is showing.
No, she's persnickety.
And we like that.
That's a good thing.
Shows grit.
All right, any more on this section?
Oh, sure, Ms. Menez.
Okay, Ava, I'm just trying to make sure that we're not missing anything. What you have at the crosswalk, which is 1.07, that relates to the section that we're looking at. So if this isn't brought up, it's going to be deleted. Is that correct?
Yes.
So does the board want to look at this 1.07? Board and staff roles and relationships. I think that is really important to include. Is this included somewhere else? And that's why it could be struck.
It is. Yeah, there is another provision that talks about that more specifically than really this chapter. I marked that we actually talk about it later.
So we have
in this
language
book.
Repeated
yeah.
somewhere else. Yes.
When that subject comes up, we can confirm that
please
that
do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is here's the technical corrections section that we talked about. And the brackets now, the parentheses, indicate choices. Now, the more of these you check, the more latitude you give. Now, the if you go down to there, below the last parenthesis, it says these technical corrections may include, then a series of parentheses, then the next sentence, next clause, not affecting the constructions or meaning of these sections. So, all of these technical corrections are technical only if they do not affect the construction or meaning of the sections. So, you may decide, for example, alterations or omissions. If you checked alterations or omissions, some might say that you are arguably affecting the construction or meaning. So some people don't check alterations or commissions or omissions. Some people might think that combining or dividing sections would conceivably. I'm just suggesting to you, you don't have to check all of those. Look at those and decide whether or not those are all the kinds of technical corrections which you would approve, and then to the extent that we've checked those, then when those technical corrections are made, you do not have to go through the first and second reading and the 120-74 rigmarole.
And you still have to have a board vote, though.
Yes.
Right, so
yes.
We're not...
They would be brought to your attention.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm saying...
And you could say, wait a minute, this does not look like a technical correction to me. Let's
pull
this out, and we'll go back to the APA. Right.
Mm-hmm. So even if you check them all,
right,
having this last sentence,
we're still,
right, still okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the vote is the trigger for us to look at it and review
that's
it.
That's why I
so
check all of them.
I would check all of them.
I do all of them.
Yeah.
Without objection, are they saying this? Without objection, without objection.
Moving on.
I hate to sound like a legislator.
Tough crowd.
Consider the month. We're doing this in May.
Frankie, in that top paragraph in the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, the eighth line down, it says Florida statutes, the cement kind.
Now, I will say to you that some districts delete this section in its entirety.
Set out in statute here. There's a statutory
some
provision.
Some school board attorneys, not necessarily persnickety, think that this waves a flag and invites conflict. So they delete it. I'm simply pointing that out to you. It is not necessary. It is not a recommendation. It is simply something that you might be interested in as far as how other districts operate. Some include this and some do not. It is the law, as Suzanne said.
Yeah, it is the law. Ms. Jimenez.
I would agree with persnickety. No, I think that sometimes, you know, in that attempt to be transparent, you do create problems for yourself, and there are always going to be individuals, especially with the mood of our country. You know, we don't want any government intervention, and so people look at policies and, you know, they can just, here's another example of government telling me what to do. And I think why people already have that mindset, why put it out there and give them that opportunity to complicate things? You know, when they need it, it will be obvious. You know, somebody will go to their principal or their superintendent and really make an issue of it.
I'm sure you have no gadflies here.
No.
But in Lee County, we had a guy who used this all the time. And he turned us every which way but loose. He was petitioning every school board meeting for variances and waivers to our policies. So I understand why some school districts delete this section. I lived it for a while.
Yeah. So, I would like to delete it.
I would like to.
Without objection.
Yes.
Without objection.
Anybody?
Preserve.
Oh, that's a long one, too, right?
right?
Yeah, it was a long one. That saved us a few pages.
Okay, so it's coming out in its entirety?
Yeah.
Yes. Several pages, so we have several.
Yeah, what we did is just, we dropped the statute in there, basically. That's what that is. Now we're on 132 executive.
Mr. Gresta.
You listed the two people or offices, if you will, that the school board actually hires, but we didn't list an internal auditor. That is their other statutory authority. Was there a reason why?
No.
Okay.
No. If you want to add it, that's fine.
Yes. I mean, it's statutory. You
yes,
can
it
do
is.
It whether it's in your policy or not.
Yes, but for consistency.
But for consistency.
The appointment of the internal auditor.
Did we already do the section about board members and if you were deceased, you would no longer...
No, it's not.
Okay,
it's
coming.
It's
sorry.
It's
coming. I liked it there because it made it a little
what
bit
is,
more clear.
Yeah.
Right
what
are
you suggesting?
Probably
take
out the
end
in after superintendent.
Yes.
Said contract shall be made in the school board of the neighborhood or county.
Which one are you
in? D.
Page 11 of 11.
Oh, I'm not there yet.
Okay.
I'm up here.
I need something.
32D.
We get there. See if you fix that.
Now the on the screen there is a comment, a note. In 1030.01, which defines the duties and the responsibilities of the superintendent, this language is contained, which indicates the superintendent has the authority to prepare procedures for the administration, which are consistent. You don't need to have that here. You can have it there. It doesn't make any difference. This is a delegation of power to the superintendent to do what he is entitled to do by statute, which is to develop procedures to implement your policies. Some districts have it in this section, and some districts do have it in the superintendent section.
Or both.
So, or we can have it in both. It doesn't hurt to have it in both. That way you can find it by tripping over. So if there's no objection to having it here, when we see 10301, you can look at it and decide whether you want to have it both places or just one.
Perfect.
We're scrolling quickly along.
Oh, I'm sorry. Could you go back to the top of page 10? Or no, just in the middle. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Once we scroll
yeah, that's
by.
Okay.
Once
you sleep, you're sleeping on the job.
I just wanted to bring to the board attention. I'm not, you know, saying it needs to come in or go out, but just the paragraph that's at the top of the screen right now about the superintendent's delegated authority to take any action. I mean, I think it's good language. It gives you your superintendent some ability if something is going on and she needs to take some action, she needs to do something, and then bring it back to you. I think it's always important to include the language that has been included to be reported back to the board at the next meeting. So I just wanted to bring it to your attention specifically when you delegate such authority. The same thing in the next paragraph where it talks about in cases of emergency may suspend parts of policies and procedures. And again, it's that wonderful language about reporting back.
And because that's what we did. This language came out of Charlotte County when we had Hurricane Charlie, and we had to suspend policies in order to accomplish certain things, and the board basically we created this language after Charlie.
Suzanne, just to you had said any action. Did you want to change it from necessary? You wanted necessary. You're okay with.
Yes, I think that's good language.
Necessary, subjective.
Right. You're looking to your superintendent, and if she brings a report back to you that she took some action under that policy, and you think, how is that necessary? That's a discussion that you have with your superintendent. But it sets a standard for her to achieve.
It's better than any.
Right. Yes,
necessary limits.
Right.
Yes. Limits Dr. Adams to.
It should be necessary. Paragraph number B. I'm sorry, Frankie.
It's okay.
You've delegated in this paragraph, or it's being proposed that you delegate authority to the superintendent to enter into written contracts. Okay. Paragraph B, one of the conditions is all costs and expenses shall be paid from internal account funds. My question is, do you want to put any kind of a dollar limit on that? And here's the example I will give. It didn't happen here. A school in another school district delegated similar authority to a principal who executed a contract for a play for the drama club.
Annie.
To put on a play. And it was paid for with internal account funds. And the amount of that contract was $67,000.
Now, we have addressed that in the finance section, and C says these delegations shall not conflict with board policy.
Okay.
Board policy specifically addresses that later.
Okay.
Good.
Having lived through that for a while, you just kind of go, whoa.
Right.
It came to the board's attention when they're checked.
Now, would this be the official name of the district here?
Just type in Claudia Jimenez.
Again, another good call. Okay, thank you.
What you like in a specific way?
The school board of Indian River County. I mean, it's statutory.
Okay,
the school board
so
has the authority to contract and sue and be sued on the.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
We're up till 12 on the calendar.
Yes. Well, we're over at VBE at 12.
So right? We're supposed to be at Derby Town.
Yeah, we certainly do.
So we need to give ourselves 20 minutes to get there.
And we can continue this, you know. We have another meeting set in June.
Okay.
And actually that would work out better for our schedule, too. So don't worry that we don't have another
time set to continue. Do you want to go till 11:30? And then, you tell me.
Well, if we go till membership is, I'm asking because membership is huge. It's a lot of information, and I like things
three
nice
of 11.
And, and so I was.
Then do you?
There's 11 pages of membership.
Do you want to stop?
Yeah.
So we'll stop at. Do you want to? Well, do you want to end now?
Well, we either have to.
We can skip it and come back.
That might be good. What's after that?
Organization is after that, and I don't think that is difficult.
So why don't we do organization,
yeah.
Okay. We'll be done, and we'll do membership.
I mean, I'm not trying to throw
out. That's great.
But we do have other obligations.
Sure. Oh, yeah. No, that's perfect. Is that okay with you guys?
Great.
It's the 19th of June. We have already set aside personal time.
And then we haven't set my time yet, have we? I don't think so.
We're not ready. So we're going to go on to 150, which I...
We'll go on to, what do we want to, 150?
150, which is organizations.
150, yeah.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Yeah,
yeah.
I didn't even realize the time...
I know.
Well, that's because I'm sitting
here looking at it. And I was thinking we're working at 11:02 with us.
It has.
So.
And you guys have gotten to where you got to now. A lot of stuff.
There we go.
There's such good conversation.
So grateful that I'm
like, I love that.
I know.
It's so southern, and you're not.
I've heard that one.
To the back entrance by the construction trailer.
Where are you from?
The ARC.
Yeah, they are.
Oh, okay.
And they're having lunch?
Okay.
Before the...
There was an email that they're going to have a light lunch for us.
They were providing lunch, so we would be late for our 1 o'clock.
They didn't know we don't have a 1 o'clock, but we get lunch.
So did they take lunch back? Or
who's that?
Did anybody?
They're providing lunch?
Late lunch for us?
So we wouldn't be late for our 1 o'clock meeting?
I did see that in an email. It's probably those little box things.
Yeah, okay.
Probably maybe...
Well, if it's on Proctor's dollar, let's go for it.
Obviously, maybe it's food service.
Oh, it is. Oh, I'm sure.
We need to do a contribution to food service for providing for our executive session. Right. We need to do that. Mr. McCain, may I have my... You paid who?
Your lunch.
I paid for lunch.
You're talking about for the breakfast item.
Oh, okay.
Right? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Keep reaching into that pocket.
No, because I paid for lunch.
Really,
we paid for our lunch.
That pocket. No, we did pay for our lunch, but we did not pay for the breakfast items. So, what do you think?
For what? Oh, I don't know.
$20.
A couple bucks each, you know.
And they provided breakfast.
They provided parfaits and coffee and juice.
Where was this?
Where was this?
You missed weren't you there for the all-day meeting?
He was there, but he didn't stay all day.
I didn't stay
all day. He was there in the morning.
Okay.
Did you
sleep?
When we went out to the complex.
Yeah.
So the things in the room.
I just think a couple of dollars each between all of us is fine. Yeah.
I love it.
You know, it's interesting.
This winter, go ahead.
I don't want $5. I don't want $5. Don't you have a couple of ones?
The students, though, that Patrick came to talk with the student advisory committee last week. It went great. You know, all the rules are changing regarding food patterns now.
Oh, yeah.
And so he brought fresh fruits and vegetables. And there's one young man, Francisco, that's been on this advisory committee for 3 years, and he always waits for the food service person to come in for the food. Well, he really turned his nose up at all. He was not happy.
So, folks,
but they gave him a lot of good feedback. It was really good.
I want to brag about this weekend. I went to Marion Military for Allison's supporting of our AA degree.
Just so everyone knows, she entered the construction entrance off 16th Avenue and looked for the construction trailers, a place to assemble prior to the same place we were before.
Patrick did a great job with the kids, and this is very involved with the kids. I mean, they get feedback
on that, and it's open his mail to get invitations.
So you and the little one just drove up and back.
Well, my husband drove my mother-in-law and daughter-in-law in their car, and he left Sunday early and came home. Allison and I went up to University of Alabama to look for the apartment.
Okay.
And when we left there Sunday, she broke her car in the middle of her car alternator. So yesterday,
we were there, so we didn't leave until late.
Wow. And I watched Nemo and encompass the train. And
do you have something smaller than
I have a built-in
yeah,
yeah,
those are wonderful.
And baby signing time. We watch baby signing.
Listen, signing is fascinating.
It is.
It is.
My Adriana was 10 years old. She was 2 years old. She was like, done. She could
yeah, born. Yeah.
So I mean, it was
wonderful. Yeah. Actually, I need to sign before the
talk. Oh, yeah. Jackson. So our girl
that's
cleaned
great.
Up. So 2 years in Alabama now.
She was
going to marry the military. Yeah, she's going to go to the
where's my first I didn't take
let me watch
it. Double back to your office.
Okay, I'll shoot you.
Okay. Thank you, board members. You gave me a chance to talk to one of my favorite people in the whole world.
Carolyn.
Carolyn
Shepard. Hey, Carolyn. Good to see you.
He talked about you when he first sat down.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what.
He did.
Tom,
he talked about you.
Tom is the ultimate attorney.
She's known me a long time.
But he would tell me when I would call him and ask him about something, he'd tell me I could do it or I couldn't. He didn't pimp-haw around. Or anything. He was on the
and she called me a lot, and she ignored what I said after.
No, she's a good district person.
That's right.
We're on 151.
Oh.
151?
Oh, that was quick.
Or 153?
We're going to come back to
the 151. Okay.
Coming back to them?
We'll do that next week.
This is good for the time.
That was Mrs. Johnson.
You're so ahead of me, Chairman.
That was Mrs. Johnson.
Oh, of course.
I don't want to take credit.
Well, why not? You did so awesome.
All right, so I understand we're going to do 015s and stop there. That's okay.
It's time.
I tell you, I've not been with a board, I don't think ever, that got through all of this the first time anyway, so you are not by yourself.
That's right.
This ought to take time. This is a labor-intensive process because it's important. So take as much time as you want. 0151.
And we're persnickety.
And here, Mr. Gresta.
And some of us are persnickety.
I am sorry.
Don't be.
151, this last session, we had that lovely amendment to how we organize now. Were you planning to revise this to take out the language about the third Tuesday
yes,
after the first Monday?
Yes, it needs to be changed.
Yeah.
The statute has changed. Thank you, Carolyn.
Thank you.
The statute has changed, and we will make the necessary revisions.
Yeah, we organize annually in the month of November.
Okay, in the month of November. Lowercase. Space. Okay.
There was that additional language. I don't think it needs to be added in, but I'll just say it out loud, that in an election year, it's the second Tuesday after the election in November. But the statute tells us when we do it in an election year. I don't think you need to add it in. But
it's still in the month of November.
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other numbers you want to talk about here?
I was just going to ask the board to look at 0153 about appointees at the organizational meeting. I know everybody likes to do it a little differently, but this is for you to decide who you want to be and how you want to behave.
Which ones do you check?
You do have the chair do some of that work.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you have the board.
Yeah. Some districts elect some appoint, let the chair appoint, some simply discuss it and reach a consensus.
Yeah.
It's how do you operate? That's really how you want to do it.
Mrs. Johnson?
How we operate is we have a list of our organizations that we need representation. Mm-hmm. Some voting, some non-voting. And we actually give that information to our executive assistant so that it is passed on to the chairman. And there are times when there are vacancies and the board chairman usually threatens and cajoles of whichever is appropriate. And however, I think that at times that's very difficult, especially for people who are newly elected to the board. They're elected, and then the next thing you know, especially those who are elected because of the process now, they can be elected in August, and they don't actually take office until much later. But they still aren't going to know what the organizations are that they're signing up for, other than the time commitment that they have. So if we check chairman shall appoint members, that's what it says. But we really have a great deal of input, and I don't really have a problem with that. But I know at times it has been unfair to those people who were new and did not realize what those time commitments were going to be.
Ms. Jimenez?
Yeah, I'm comfortable with the middle paragraph because it doesn't, at times, the chair does have to kind of step in and cajole. But I wouldn't feel comfortable just making a shall appoint sweeping statement for the chairman. So I think the middle paragraph is the middle ground where the chairman cajoles as needed, and we usually do, as a team, recognize the need to fill those positions, and someone always usually steps up to the plate. So I wouldn't favor the shall appoint.
We almost sort of do three. I was going to say, well, we kind of talk about it, reach a consensus, and then, but I don't want, you know. So either, I'm fine with any of them.
Well, and I, actually now rereading the bottom one, I kind of agree, Mr. Pegler, because it does speak, I think, more to
On the last paragraph. Is this a statutory requirement that it is the responsibility of the board? It is.
Yes.
What do you do if you don't have a board member, if you don't have one member who owns a business occupying commercial space located within the school district?
Every school board has two people to go to the VAB. One is a school board member.
Okay.
The second one is that community.
Citizen member. I'm sorry. I didn't read the citizen.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. That was one I was on the board that no one asked for.
Yeah.
I thought McCain was going to have to go. Yes.
It's so easy now. The old value adjustment board, you had to go and hear every appeal.
Yes, that's what I was doing.
You appoint a magistrate now, so you only hear maybe two a year. I've served on the value adjustment board off and on for.
Now, here's a perfect example of a different approach to bylaws. One sentence. Version 1, several sentences, version 2. The longer, the shorter, if you like. Scroll down a little bit.
Short works.
Now, again, if you choose version 2, you don't have to choose all those options. That's totally up to you as to how do you operate now is basically how you should make the selection here.
Version one.
Mrs. Johnson.
But it says time for regular and special meetings.
I think our business meeting is the only thing we really want to put there, because I don't think we want to tie our hands with, even though we have a set pattern for other things.
Shall.
Just regular meetings.
Yeah, just regular strike and special.
Great.
And just strike and special.
So, clarification. So, when it says regular, that is beyond
this. No, you need to keep meetings.
So
that's special, keeping meetings.
So regular is beyond, it's not just business meetings, it's all the other stuff.
Just our regular business meeting.
So then why doesn't it state regular, business meeting? Just say what it is. It's a business meeting, so that there's no doubt in anyone's mind that we're also talking about roundtables, workshops.
Mm. Or our regular business meeting, yes. That's good.
Was version 2 the FSBA version?
Do you see FSBA?
I think that's really cute.
You
do that.
All right, 155.
Well, that's the end of the FSBA.
Two versions of 155.
I like the shorter version. And I think both the committees and subcommittees, and I don't see anything with the standing committees either. Wouldn't those both be appropriate?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
It wouldn't be an either or.
Right. Version 1, both boxes. Check both boxes.
Under there, though, it's got a grammatical kind of something funny. When the very first sentence, committees of the board members shall, whatever, conduct studies, comma, make recommendations. Is it, I'm just confused, is it conduct studies and make recommendations?
Yes.
Or,
yes,
or is there
correct.
A third?
Take the comma out and put it in. Thank you.
Well,
just looking at the crosswalk of 2.43, B addresses the committees appointed by the superintendent or principal. Is that addressed at a later?
Yes. Legal counsel.
Tom, do you also address the rights of employees to legal counsel under the statutory provisions when you get to personnel policies later? This is just talking about to employ, to render to the board and superintendent.
I can't remember, Suzanne, whether we specifically addressed that right or not. I don't think we do either. I know it's statutory.
Right.
And there may be a place for us to put that in if you think it's appropriate.
Yeah, I'll just make a note when we get to those.
Good.
Looking at those rules.
That would be in the 1,000, 3,000, 4,000 section.
Okay.
Be identical in all. Well, no, not necessarily. Teachers, instructional staff have different rights than non-instructional staff in that regard. Okay?
Point of clarification. So you're saying that this language relating to legal services for board members and or the superintendent is addressed somewhere else?
No.
No. This is about your authority to hire legal counsel for yourself and for the superintendent.
Oh, okay.
In future policies, when we get there, I've made a note to take a look at adding in your language currently in Rule 2.09 to see if it needs to be inserted somewhere.
Thank you. I just wanted clarification on that. Thank you very much.
All right. That takes care of the 1.5, I think. And I understand you have another obligation or obligations, as board members typically do from time to time.
Can we do 1.6, you think?
Oh, that's a biggie. Yeah, that's a biggie. That's parliamentary.
0 duty.
going to be 170. That one is done.
Pam, what time is it on June 19th?
The same time as
Nine.
Today.
Okay.
9 to 12.
9 to 12.
About 10 minutes. Do you want to do 1-7?
We're on 1-7.
We were going to... We thought 1-6 would be a little too much to take on right now. So we're going to go just do the 1-7s under duties.
The opening sentence is simply an aspirational kind of thing. It is, if you don't like it or if you want to put something else in there, that's fine. You can just start with review of policy. Some districts like to have these introductions and some don't. Totally up to you as to how you feel about this.
You're asking specifically about the statement. I like the statement.
I do too.
I like it very much. That's what we should be doing every time we sit down together.
I like it.
Any comments or questions on this section?
Ms. Jimenez.
Okay, we're in 0171, the next section. On page 2 of 3, the very top line, says the board will also evaluate how policies have been implemented and their general effectiveness. Isn't that the responsibility of the superintendent when it comes to some of these policies? So where do you draw the line?
That's a good question, and some districts have addressed that, have changed that section or deleted it. It's a question, how would you do that, I guess, is another question. How would you... if you have that in policy, how are you going to evaluate it? And how are you going to implement your policy? What's your process?
Ms. Jimenez?
I mean, just as a follow-up, you know, policies are great, but when you have such a large organization, so many players, so many people, the reality is that many times these policies are not complied with, and how do you do the follow-up? You know, it's got to be a sampling or something, because you just cannot please every single individual in your organization.
Some boards delete this paragraph.
I'm all for taking it out.
I would take it out.
And leave paragraph 2 in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ms. Jimenez.
Okay, just because we deleted that. But I would still want to know, so where is their accountability? Because if we are spending time on these policies, I understand that it's not realistic to police every single individual that works for the organization, but there's got to be a middle ground, because if there's no accountability, we're wasting our time. Just, you know, full stop.
Mrs. Disney.
Yes, I was... That's what I was going to say. I don't want to throw this out completely. Could we make a note to set it aside and make sure that we read somewhere about the accountability piece on the superintendent's part, whether it's in policy or whether it ends up being part of our next evaluation process? I just don't want.
That's typically what happens.
Yeah.
It is in the evaluation of the superintendent.
Right.
Process. Mr. Gresta?
And Mrs. Disney, I can tell you in the last version of the evaluation instrument that the school board prepared, there is a specific provision that talks about the implementation of policy and holding people under Dr. Adams' authority to your policy. So you have specifically included it in your evaluation of the superintendent's performance.
I'm just going to make note of this language and see how it compares to the language that we wrote. Thank you.
All right. Scrolling down. policies every 2 years is required by statute. And once we've done this, every year when we come back with our updates, there will be, we will provide the superintendent with a statement that I would assume would be reviewed by the attorney, that stipulates the superintendent has complied with this requirement.
Do we have under subsection 3, we don't have a, do we have policies on planned community relations?
We have a communications plan that has not been updated in.
Should we
looking at?
I'm sorry, I was going on point 3.
Yeah.
That was the only one that I thought was a little Ms. Jimenez?
Can I go back?
It's that backup,
no,
Frankie.
Point 2.
It's not numbered.
Point 2.
Oh, yours aren't numbered?
We're seven, the last.
Yeah, if you move your screen over a little bit more. You.
There
you go.
Point 3.
So if you go to point 3, point 2, and you look at that last sentence, to this end, this effort will involve all stakeholders to formulate a vision, goals, and strategic plan for the district. In my time on the board does that.
Right.
We do that at a workshop. We don't involve the stakeholders. Get it out of there if we're not doing it.
And it's really the board.
We've done it different ways and different times.
So what are you suggesting that we delete?
Last paragraph.
Last sentence
in the paragraph.
And the same thing under community relations. The same general last sentence is included in that one. And if your policy adoption is...
Do we have to have a community relations policy?
No.
I mean, I sort of...
We're talking about two different policies at the same time here. Can we finish up with one or the other?
Well, I think were there any other changes to point 2?
Well, and it, rather than striking it completely, I think it would be better to... the board will formulate a vision, goal, and strategic plan, and then we have the option to bring in as many stakeholders as we want or not. But I appreciate that that's in there.
So just take out the first
one. Part of our continuous improvement plan to review that and make sure that we're on track.
Ms. Jimenez?
And I, in an ideal world, we wouldn't have to say let's strike it because we don't do it. But I think we have to be realistic. If we don't do it, we don't do it. And is it the time to put something in policy that states that we will involve all stakeholders? Maybe that's a goal that we can look towards, but I would hate to see it in our bylaws when we really don't do it.
I
think it's important, and I wish we did it. I really wish we did it, but that's not the reality that we live in.
I think Mrs. Disney was saying that the school board will formulate a vision, goals, and strategic plan for the school district. The school board and
but if I heard you correctly, I thought you also said that we will or will not involve stakeholders, just to keep the stakeholder piece in.
No, I didn't want to keep the stakeholder piece in. The board would formulate the vision, but that by having it in there, just we could put it in the
superintendent's
again.
We could formulate
do that
the vision.
At will.
Very okay.
Right.
Well, Ms. Jimenez, is that okay? With is that there now in red?
Yes.
Okay.
That's what we could.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Now on to 171.3. And the question of the chair was, do we need this? Are you required to have it? No, you're not.
And the only reason I ask is that we all, part of, again, the superintendent's evaluation is the community relations aspect, and we don't really have a community relations policy. So, I'd take it out, but I don't know how everybody else feels. Mrs. Johnson?
Once you have something in policy that you will do this every 2 years, you will do it every two
that
years.
Is.
So if it is important to us at a certain point in time, then we should have that as a goal or an objective.
Right.
But to have it in there with something as specific and finite as that, I think I would take
This doesn't say you have to have this accumulation every 2 years. It says you have to have a policy, and then you have to review that policy every 2 years. That's what this says.
And that's what I'm saying I don't feel is necessary for that to be part of it. I think there are times when things are going very well, and for you to revisit that is not the highest and best use of time, which is very limited by our very limited staff.
Now you're into a different place.
No, I'm sitting right here.
The law says you have to review every policy every 2 years, whether that's a good use of your time or not. That's what the law says. So all this is saying is you're going to have a community relations policy
every 2 years,
along with the other policies that were listed. I'm not quite sure why we have this, to tell you the truth.
You have
to do them all. You have to review all of your policies every 2 years. So I'm not sure that you need any of these.
Just as a point of clarification, do we have a community relations policy in our...
No, we do not.
We have a section...
That's what Ms. Johnson is getting at.
We have a section in the 9000 series which addresses community relations, and you may decide at that point that you'd like to have a policy. Or not.
Mrs. Disney.
Board members, would you strike the first sentence and then read it and see if you like having it, and if you do, I do.
And leave the board commits to maintaining strong community relations by involving stakeholders in district planning.
Yes, as hard as we've worked on communicating with the community this year, I think it's a strong statement, and I'd like to see it kept in.
But this is under review of policy.
Right. So we could put that under community relations.
Communication.
That would be in the 9000.
I agree.
Take it out of here.
And so make a note, we'll look at it for the 9,000.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Minister, did you have your pen out?
No, I was just
going
to say policy.
What's the numbering?
Why don't we just 9,000.
Let's go down to 171.1.
Okay.
I think we need to take out all of those.
Okay.
Right. 171 talks in terms of reviewing the policies that your statute requires.
That's good.
Then we can address these specific subjects in the topic areas in the rest of your policy.
So we'll take out the point 1.2, point 3.
Give it a quarter.
On all of them.
Keeping
171
period?
Yes.
Yes.
We can take this one out too.
That's just the fourth one.
Right. Yeah. And we've already talked about the ethics anyway.
So that's 171.1 and everything below that.
Yes. So you just have the general statement.
That's better.
You review the policy like the law requires.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, board members.
Good job, guys.
You are a stimulating
June 19th, 9 to 12.
Great. Yeah, we did. We probably would agree to stay if we didn't have another commitment, but we do.
Okay, remember,
you just
16th.
Come back.
By the construction area.
See you there.
Bye.
Okay. I have keys. I'll go over the door.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Yeah, I don't have my keys.
Quite frankly, every time we do one of these, we're going back in.